This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Bluffing, betting, gambling, and how to spot a cheat are just some of the subjects in the new book, Poker Nation, by my guest Andy Bellin. He started to play seriously when he attended graduate school in 1992. He was studying physics and astronomy at Wesleyan University when he started to lose himself at the poker table. He got so carried away with the game that he dropped out of school shortly before he expected to flunk out. After giving up on astronomy, he played semi-pro poker for several years and got a job at the literary magazine, The Paris Review. Poker Nation is his first book. Bellin lives in New York City, where poker is technically illegal, but the law is not enforceable unless a third party is benefiting, such as in games that require a fee to play. Bellin used to belong to several underground poker clubs, but he says they broke up when Mayor Giuliani started enforcing the law. I asked Bellin what he liked about those clubs.
The one thing that I never understood about closing them was that it was safe, it was reliable, there was always a game. You knew that you weren't going to get cheated or robbed or anything like that, and they were great games. They were competitive, yet there were a lot of people there that shouldn't have been there that made it sort of profitable.
No people for you to take advantage of.
I guess so. I mean, I hate to think of it that way, but maybe I'll get back into therapy now, but yes.
Give us a sense of the range of people that would show up at these games.
There, it is the most eclectic collection of people you could ever imagine. You'd walk in at 2 a.m. on a Sunday, and it would be, you know, Park Avenue lawyer next to stripper, next to Albanian prince, next to Brooklyn cabbie. It was just the most bizarre but most entertaining group of people.
To what extent do you see poker as a game of chance, and to what extent do you see it as a game of skill?
Well, in any situation involving dice or a deck of cards, there's always an element of luck. But what you have to remember is the theory of probability, which basically defines all random activity, all random chance. And what that basically states is that the more chances you take, the more hands you play, the more times you roll the dice, the more likely it is that the odds will hold true. So in the short run, when you sit down and you play a hand or any, you know, just for a night, there is a lot of luck involved in the game. You can get terrible cards, or you can get good cards, but which is the worst thing to do, and have somebody get better cards, and you'll lose everything. But if you look at poker as a year-long endeavor or a lifelong endeavor, then you're sort of taking the element of chance out. The theory of probability, the more hands you play, dictates that everybody will get the same cards eventually in all the same situations, and the better players will make more money and lose less money, and therefore it's a lot less chance involved.
Where did you learn how to play, and who did you learn from?
Well, God, I'm going to give my family a bad name. My mother taught me when I was very young, and we used to go up to, my grandmother had this sort of haunted house way off in the woods of the Adirondacks, and my mother used to take my brother and I up there, and this was like, you know, early 70s, so there was no TV, no internet, no cable, almost no telephone. So, you know, as two city kids out in the woods, I would do, terrified of everything, I would just try and keep my family up as long as possible, just doing anything. And my mother taught us how to play poker, and I think my first game was it involved mini marshmallows as chips, and my brother and I would just play through till the morning when we could sleep then.
So was your mother your poker mentor, or did you have a mentor more from the poker world when you got a little older?
Forgive me, Mom. No, she was not my poker mentor. But when I got into graduate school, I had a math professor who was just an absolute statistics freak. I mean, he just loved everything, would quote these bizarre deaths statistics about, child mortality in Guatemala or something, and really just, that's the kind of thing that made him happy. And the one thing that he was obsessed with more than anything was poker. And one day he pulled me aside and said, "Do you play?" And I kind of chuckled and said yes, and we sort of ran off like towards the Foxwoods Casino to go play.
And so he was interested in probability and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it was, I mean, whether he would have admitted this or not, he loved the game for the same reasons that I do, the competition and the thrill, and there's sort of something sexy about it. But, I mean, the way he rationalized it to himself was that it's this perfect statistical model. You can just watch the law of averages at work anytime you sit down at a poker table. So that was actually, it's the best way to learn is to start with the math, to start figuring out what the right thing to do is and what's the wrong thing to do. And then you start learning the sort of subtleties along the way. But it was a great poker education.
If you're going to work with laws of probability when you're playing poker, you need to have a good memory and remember what cards have shown up on the table and what hands other people are likely to have, what cards are likely to show up in the future. Did you already have a good memory, or did you learn tricks to train your memory to remember what it is you need to know when you're playing the game?
I think I had an average memory, and I had operated under the assumption that memory was a birthright. You either had a great memory or you didn't. And what I found out along the way was that there were tricks, their mnemonics, their ways to organize things by grouping them that improve your ability to retain information. And I don't have a great memory now, but, you know, it certainly helps to try and figure out what works best for your mind, whether it's, you know, you see a series of cards laid on a table, you know, do you try and make up a story? Do you try and spell something out with their first letters? Do you group them, by using patterns or something? And it's an amazing way to help your memory.
What are the things you most want to remember when you're playing?
In a game like Seven Card Stud, where there are a lot of cards exposed, it really helps to, you know, if you've got a pair of threes and you've seen one three in somebody else's hand, obviously that's going to change the way you play the game. You've just cut your odds of making three of a kind in half. So memorizing the cards that have been played is very important. But being able to, particularly because most of the poker that's played in America is played around, you know, in garages and around bar rooms and things like that, you're going to play with the same guys over and over again. So you have to keep in mind the way they play, the things they do, their tendencies. And in that way, it makes them a lot more predictable. And you can, 90% of the time, you can base your actions on more evidence. So that's really going to help you in the long run.
What kind of tendencies do you spot?
You're playing five card draw and somebody draws one card. The classic question is, does he have a four card straight or flush where he's drawing to a big hand, or does he have two pair and he's already got a decent starting hand? There's almost no real way to tell, except there are a lot of people that my friend John is a good example. He's a guy who, when he would have a straight or a flush draw and he needed a fifth card to make a hand, he would never bet it. He would always just call whatever was bet. He would never initiate a bet. But when he had two pair, he would always start the betting. So as soon as I figured that out, I've been playing with him for 10 years now, I when he draws one card, I know what he is doing.
This is not something you would call to his attention, right? You wouldn't say, I've noticed that you have this habit.
I think I just did call to his attention, is he right? Which is so bad.
He might not be listening. But I mean, really, you obviously don't want somebody to be conscious of the things that they're doing that betray them.
Oh, of course not. I mean, you create your private little books on people and you keep them your whole life. I mean, I waited, like I said, I started playing with my brother when I was seven. So, you know, for 25 years almost, and I never told him that he has a great tendency to tell me what his cards are without him knowing it until I wrote the book, and I let him find out by reading the book. So,
his reaction?
He didn't believe it, and then I pointed it out actually last night at a card game. But he has, you know, my brother's an incredibly sturdy sort of. I mean, he's got these huge hands, and he's like this very macho guy. And he just, when he bluffs or when he does something out of the ordinary, he's absolutely steady as a rock. But when he's got the best hand and he's trapped somebody, he gets so excited that his hands shake, which is completely a dead giveaway. So for years I've known what he's had in his hands.
So do you fold when you see his hand shaking?
Immediately, without a thought, in a second. I can't get the cards out of my hands fast enough.
Do you think poker is a good name for a good game for people who are obsessive compulsive, in the sense that some people who are very obsessive compulsive get really obsessed with numbers and with counting and adding?
By good game, do you mean like a great way for them to become totally obsessed with something and lose their minds, or a good game as in
like because
they will? It's the perfect game to become completely obsessed with, but it's not healthy.
Right.
Yeah. There are so many stories of people who just had these very normal 9-to-5 lives, and one day walked into a card room or a casino for the first time, and their lives were completely altered just by that introduction into this world. There's actually a great story in my book about a kid who was a JD MBA. I think he was working at a big accounting firm. Had a very normal life, wife, mortgage payments, and then somehow stumbled upon one of the card houses. And in about 7 months, had lost his wife, lost his job, was $8,000 to $10,000 in debt, and is now a fugitive of the state of New York. So, not so good sometimes.
Did you ever feel like you were getting anywhere close to that level of danger in your life?
I get that question all the time. I don't know how to answer that honestly. I mean, I would never have played as much as I did had I thought that I was doing something detrimental to myself. But looking back, I played a ton of poker. I mean, I was playing 5-6 nights a week, 7 hours a day. I mean, I was more passionate about this than I was about school or work or anything. I mean, I thought of it as my job, and I happened to have thought I was great at my job and loved my job. But gambling addiction is a very, very tricky addiction, more so than I think than alcoholism, because the warning signs are so well hidden. You know, you don't look terrible, you don't wreck cars, your life just slowly becomes consumed by gambling. And you never give away what's happening to you until it's way too late, until you're deep, deep in debt. So I tried very hard to keep conscious of all of those things, but it's I was never close to losing tons of money, but looking back now, I mean, I was in, you know, it was definitely on the brink.
My guest is Andy Bellin, author of Poker Nation. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer and poker player Andy Bellin. His new book is called Poker Nation. Now, how do you decide if someone else is bluffing? What are some of the things you look for?
Well, people do the weirdest things. We all get drilled into us at an early age that lying is a bad thing to do, and all of the deception we intend to bestow upon people at a poker table it comes into conflict with that. So people have the strangest reactions. People cover their mouths when they bluff. Some people look away. Some people change the tone of their voice. Some people bet way more aggressively physically. They throw the chips in the pot when they're bluffing. Some people do it very sheepishly, like they're embarrassed to be doing this. It all depends on the person, but figuring out a tell like that is really, it's such a huge advantage. When I was in graduate school, I used to play in a game, and apparently, they didn't tell me this until after I left school. Note I said left and not graduated, but after I left school, I was notified that I had a tell where when I would be bluffing or be making a very reluctant call, if it was a $10 bet, I would be doing it with, I would make the wager with small denominations. I would use 10 $1 chips or 20 50-cent chips to get rid of my small chips. And when I was good hand, when I was confident in it, I would use a big chip. I would throw in a $10 chip. And it's an amazing tell.
Once you realize you have a tell, is it difficult to get rid of, just as it's difficult to break nearly every habit?
I think it is, but you sort of do it proactively in the sense that you don't recognize the tell and then compensate for it. What you try and do is, whether you're bluffing or whether you're making a reluctant call or whether you've got an amazing hand, you try and go through the process of betting in the exact same way. You do it almost as mechanically as possible. Grab the chips in the same way. You throw them in the pot the same way. You look at your cards in the same way. You bet using the same inflection. And if you can do that, you're better off trying to avoid it proactively rather than reacting to it.
Have you played cards with people who you were sure, or at least pretty confident, were cheating?
I tell everybody that if you've played more than five hands of poker in your life, you've probably been cheated at one point or another, which is not to say that every game you're in is crooked, but if anybody has ever looked at, you know, the bottom card on a deck, they've cheated in a sense. They've taken advantage of some inside information and they've used it without, you know, stopping the game and saying, redeal the cards. So cheating can be in very subtle and almost meaningless ways. You know, knowing one card in a deck is an advantage, but not a huge advantage. Or you can get, you can have people try and, you know, steal the shoes off your feet. And I have been, I was in a poker game in a casino a long time ago where I found that when I didn't even realize that I was playing with what they call a partnered team, where two people sort of signal each other what their cards are and they try and trap you in between them, where you've got a decent hand, one's got a great hand, one's got a terrible hand, and they just keep raising because they know they're going to split the proceeds in the end. So there is cheating. It's just the problem is that you have to become a very good card cheat yourself to be able to spot it. You have to learn what it sounds like.
What do you have to be a cheat to spot it?
Well, you have to be able to manipulate the deck yourself to know what it looks like when somebody else is doing it. You have to know what it sounds like when somebody is peeking at a card or dealing the second or third card off the deck and not the top one, to be able to spot it. And the only way to become familiar with it is to do it yourself.
In your book, Poker Nation, you write, losing begets losing. Can you talk about that losing spiral that you can fall into?
Yeah, it's you find yourself in the throes of it, and you think, I can't believe I got myself into this again. But you say to yourself, I just lost money, so I have to play more poker to win. And then you play more poker to win your money back, but you've actually lost, so now you have to play even more poker. Also, the mathematics logically conspire against losing, in the sense that if you start out with $500, and you lose 50% of your money, you've got $250. Now you've got to make 100% of your money to get even. So it seems like the further you go, the more difficult it is to crawl out of the hole. And also, when you lose, you start getting frustrated. And when you get frustrated, you start playing irresponsibly. And then when you start playing irresponsibly, you start losing more. And then it becomes this vicious cycle that's terrible. And wildly unprofitable and makes for a miserable evening. That's why often the best thing you can do after losing a big hand is just pick up your chips and go home and come back and fight another day.
Are you capable of doing that?
Sometimes, I think. I used to pride myself on the expression for when a player starts losing his mind at a poker table and playing irresponsibly is that he's tilting. And I used to pride myself on never tilting, but the fact was, I guess I used to tilt in my own way. Like one of the most important decisions you have to make at a poker table is if you've lost your money, do you buy back in? And the reason it's so important is you have to figure out why you've lost your money. Were you just getting bad cards and buying back in is going to further your attempts to get even because you're a favorite at that table? Or are you just completely outclassed and just go home and, you know, watch a movie and then come back and hope those guys are gone in the morning? But I was never a great judge of that. So in a sense, I would lose and then I would have that sort of tilty feeling to me, and I'd think, you know what, I got to get back in this game. I'm a favorite at this table, and a lot of the times I wasn't. So I think that was my greatest shortcoming as a player.
Do you like to play against someone who's tilting? Are they easy to win against?
Yeah, especially if you can keep them tilting. You know, you can just sort of subtly remind them of that hand that cost them $1,000 or
something.
Oh, that's
so not nice.
You know what? There's a lot about poker that's not nice. But like I said, it's warfare without weapons, you know? I mean, the psychological aspect is just as important as the card play. If you can keep a cool head where somebody else is losing their, you know, they're cool, you're at a huge advantage, and that's where you make your money.
Do you believe in beginner's luck?
Absolutely. My girlfriend, the first time she played, just went on a tear. She just couldn't miss. Same is true at a horse racing track. First time I taught her how to throw dice at a crap table, she threw the dice across the table, hit a man in the head, and they fell in the well and turned out an 11, and we won. So, yes, very much so. It's a very important part of the game.
Well, Andy Bellin, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you. That was great fun.
Andy Bellin is the author of Poker Nation. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.